Okay then. Okay, Sheila, can you hear me? Okay, ready then. Good. So, some of you will have taken a spiritual mentor or somebody as your root spiritual mentor, your guru. Alexander Berzin calls them spiritual mentors. But guru, is that what you think of him? That your teacher as a guru? I don't know. Root guru seems quite usable in English these days. Guru in Sanskrit just means teacher, though, doesn't it? It hasn't got special connotations specifically of spiritual qualities. So by what signs do you know that person as your guru? Mark, have you any ideas on this subject? You've been very quiet this morning. It's because you're a Yorkshireman. Yeah, His Holiness is like a, if they have a good relationship with him, you think that's a good sign, sort of thing. Yeah, that's particularly pertinent in this country, isn't it, or in our modern situation. But how did you develop the idea that His Holiness was the the absolute dependable teacher? Yeah, knowledge, behavior, lineage. Yes, I suppose that's kind of something to go on to, something to consider as well, isn't it? Have you got any particular example in mind, either of you two? Have you got any more specific example in mind, you two, having sort of more specific points to make? Whether you're thinking of a incident you could share with us, of course you don't want to embarrass people or anything.
Being
beaten out of you, yeah? Yeah. That sounds like it. Yeah, because a lot of more timid students can be put off by that approach. Yeah. You know? So I've been terrified by, you know, teachers and thought I couldn't go really go near them because not because they really were aggressive. Hopefully, yeah. But if you never go back, you don't. Yeah, well, they do what they preach, sort of thing.
Yeah,
they're consistent with what they tell others to do. They do it themselves, sort of thing. You know,
yeah.
They keep their own vows.
In private, they are still the way they are in public.
Yeah.
And even if it was doing 10-day teaching, they would still be on the 10th day, still be consistent. You know what I mean? Don't wait,
yeah, it has to be like a bit long term, you know, you can't just go on first impressions. So you have to watch them over a period of time, and that's where that consistency will come in, that they are really like that, not just making an effort for you or, you know, making an effort for the audience, but they've got a bit more, that there is a genuine quality that they have, you know. So is he a person who does teach, or does he sort of a? Yeah. So it's not just a. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, sometimes the depression are quite deep, you know, and it isn't just a few hours of meditation that get rid of it. You know, it's like some kind of depression, you get the feeling, is a physical thing, you know, the way people suffer from it very severely. I'm not saying this gentleman in particular, but, you know, it's a lifelong struggle against that kind of thing. So, you know, that's some sort of his karmic lot, you know, in this life is to be plagued. And it isn't, you know, so it might be just going a bit deeper than just the your attitude sort of thing that you can improve in meditation. Well, Lama Zopa says if you see faults in the guru, that's the guru is the Buddha, but you see faults, that's your karma to see the faults, not the guru's karma.
But do you think
But well, I wouldn't like to contradict what Dhammazopa says. Have I reported him correctly? Maybe I'm taking his name in vain there. But his yeah, and that's what we're really talking about. Well, yes, once you've accepted them as your guru, then things change a bit, because then you are trying to have a positive as relations as possible, which may include, you know, letting the good qualities shine and not taking so much notice of the bad ones. But yes. Well, it's difficult to say, isn't it? Yeah, well, that's fair enough. But as somebody else says, it's like somebody who can inspire one person, never mind whether they get depressed or not, but just the good teacher and so forth, but other people just wouldn't find them so inspiring because of what they like, you know, the style of teaching they like to give and so on. So it's this comes down to also to, you know, personal kind of sort of points. Yes, I mean, how are these? How are we to evaluate somebody? Are there correct signs for seeing somebody as a spiritual teacher? It's not so cut and dried, is it? How do you look from your Hungarian perspective?
I wouldn't say it's a Hungarian perspective. But I can only tell my perspective as
a Hungarian. Yeah, I'm joking.
In my case, it was mainly on recommendation. My dad really is a friend of mine, recommended me to you to go out and see how it is. And what I found there answered all of my questions. And then after 5 years, I went back to this 10-day meditation course of Anna Karin. And since then, it's been relatively easy because of the learning.
Yeah, so that's when it's working well. It works like that then, yeah, that's good. You fit into a sort of a teachings and a sort of body of teachers who give those teachings, and you've got superb ability to teach properly, you know, and have the realizations which go with it, it seems. So that all seems to flow very easily, doesn't it? But not everybody's had such a good experience in their lives.
But I think that it's true. It's interesting. This is actually a very interesting discussion that I have with friends who meet some teachings or teachers. And I think the less you know, the more it's important to find a kind of anchor, like this wholeness.
Mm.
Mm. It is a lot easier to say, okay, here's the master, that's where he comes from. Does it fit what I think is good for me?
Yeah. My personal attraction to Buddhism was from, it seemed to be like what the teachers were teaching, like I was listening to the message. But I suppose everybody does that really, don't you, in the beginning. It seems to answer some of your questions. Nobody else has been able to answer. So you do get into it from the point of view the teachings make sense. So then gradually you start to have admiration for the teachers who teach it and kind of live it, not just able to explain it, but they seem to have those refreshing good qualities that, you know, you admire in people. Whether it's just simple things like kindness, or, you know, just sort of... you know, they can talk so enthusiastically and kind of, you know, skillfully about deep subjects like emptiness that it's really impressive to see them, you know, handling the subject so well. You really think there's something there, you know, and they can put their finger on it. It's a bit impressionistic, isn't it? Perhaps. Yeah, I think even in Theravada Buddhism that might be true too. They don't have a sort of a... I don't know much about it, but you don't hear so much about that kind of relationship, do you?
Well, actually, to be fair, but people who go close to the Pandita or Achacha definitely was. I mean, I've observed people I know who go close to the teachers, which is incredible.
Incredible what?
Reverence and heart connection.
Yeah, they're certainly sort of very clear that he was a very advanced being, sort of thing, you know, and talking about them in those terms. And then in the East, there's also that sort of idea of obedience, which maybe is not so common in our society, that elders, whoever they are, you know, elders in your organization, your parents, or elders in your monastery, they're really, obedience is the norm, yeah, that you do what you're told. Perhaps that's not a bit foreign in our more free-thinking society, where people are going to make their own minds up. So there's a cultural difference there, I don't know. The idea of being told what to do all the time is a bit, doesn't sit comfortably with a lot of Westerners. Like me. Maybe better if it would, I don't know. Better if it did. You took somebody, this is a Tibetan teacher, a Buddhist teacher, not a Christian, yeah. Yes, and I mean, the allowance, that also comes in the way people talk about gurus in Tibetan tradition, you know, how it's... omens or something, you know, like what do you, more on the instinctive level, that's what I'm trying to say, more on the sort of feeling level rather than sort of sober evaluation, that somebody really impresses you or there's sort of such good signs when you first meet or something like that, you know. How did you feel when you first met this person, or you felt something very sort of potential, sort of flourishing right from the beginning? Just before you even sort of really got to know them. Some people might feel like that. Or... Yeah. Yeah, I met people like that. Yeah, they said they just opened the book and there was a picture of Kalu Rinpoche in the book. And he was somebody who was thinking of being a Christian monk, you see. But he just saw this picture and he had a real, a very simple guy, not some advanced practitioner. Don't know where he is now, a Spanish guy. And he said he just looked at this picture and he said that meant something very much to him, the old Kalu Rinpoche, you know. So much so that he kind of found out who this person was and, you know, that became... He became Buddhist then, became a teacher just from, you know, that kind of picture having a awakening, some sort of imprint in his mind.
So where does that fit into the idea of science?
Well, you know, you talk to Tibetans, I'm sure they would take that sort of that thing very much into account. They're not always working on, you know, the purely rational, sensible, you know, evaluation through correct science type of level, are they? Or, you know, evaluating someone's behavior, but you know, they do believe in a bit of omens and stuff like that, you know. First impressions could count for a lot, or you know, it was something happened when you first met your teacher. Did the sun come out from behind the clouds or something like that? You know, some promising kind of coincidence like that, or did you have dreams that where this person came into it afterwards, or you know, that kind of thing. They would. That's certainly, you know, somebody who's not so much stuck in their conceptual thinking mind that they could be sensitive to those kind of signs. Yes, that's a good one too. Yes, Atitya has lots of, let's be rude, the groupie type students, you know, who are kind of in a, sort of bask in the aura of the teacher or something. I find it a bit of sort of a bit off-putting somehow, you know. As if the teacher letting them behave like that and sort of just be a bit over-admiring, you know. It's maybe that's a sign of one of the eight worldly dharmas, you know, I don't know. But, no, that's a bit unfair, probably. Yeah. Yeah, or how they're treating others, competing for the guru's attention or something, you know. Be a bit. Yes, yeah. Mm. Yes, especially for shy people, you know, that makes incredible difference. Yeah, I'd say so in my case. Some teachers really scare me, though, you know, like the slightest sign that they are a bit displeased, it like really puts me off somehow. Not because they're behaving badly, not because they are being rude or, you know, offhand or anything, but just my own shyness or something makes me cringe, you know, sort of difficult to make progress. But on the other hand, there are teachers who you just see their picture and you don't know them at all, but their picture has, a well-taken picture maybe, has such a, they have such sort of a jolly appearance of being Buddha-like, you know, just from their photograph. Don't you think so? Like Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, the old Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, or Kala Rinpoche for that matter, that late Jampa Gyatso in Italy. There were teachers who, you know, just seeing a good photograph of them, you thought they must have some good qualities. They must be very kind or something, you know, very elevated in their minds. Yeah, but a good actor could impersonate it.
Yeah, but I think there's something biological about it. You might be able to impersonate it to a degree, but really authentic. You know, maybe that's very slight, sort of muscle in the face.
I'm sure Darren Brown could do it. Who?
Was the spot.
They don't have a classic good-looking face from a Western point of view, but
the expression, the emotion, the sense you get back from it, overwhelming.
Yeah, our teacher. It's a teacher at the School of Dialectics, our late principal. He was, you know, if you look at him, you think he was just some kind of farmer guy. He was like, you know, just kind of down from the hills, and nobody's educated. But, you know, and at other times you could see he was really, really, you know, had this sort of most joyful face and most... you know, happy demeanor, and he was very, very committed to helping others, definitely. So he was really one of those persons who did it on the ground. He didn't just meditate about it. You know, from another side, he was just totally rough and ready, you know, totally unsophisticated. Yeah, so even first impressions, you can be, you know, can be quite reliable then, or quite going towards being reliable. But the best thing is I think to watch somebody for a while, isn't it? You know, just let things get to know them gradually, which is how I like to get to know people anyway. But I think that's, you know, to check somebody out, you do need to get to know them a bit, don't you? Not just sort of fall for first impressions. And get carried away too quickly.
Is it something about checking somebody out and gaining brand confidence that you learn? Because that would explain somebody who might find that particular inspiring, because they're still seeing that they can learn something they want to learn from that person. Mm. Whereas, you know, some of us have just had a bad taste in life as possible. We've seen very far horizon. So we're interested in people who are moving towards that far horizon. Something about confidence that you can reliably learn something from this person that you want to learn.
Yeah, I mean, that's what the relationship is for, isn't it? So that you can learn and develop. So that's what you need, somebody who can lead you along like that. Yeah, so that's what it's all about. So they do need to have more knowledge than you, and then skill in teaching it maybe, and then a kind demeanor so that, you know, that you can, that it's pleasant to be with them, you know, and you know, your experience with them can be positive. But of course, there's some gurus who like treat their students, give them a hard time, like Marpa giving Milarepa a hard time, but he could take it. That the guru isn't just somebody who's sort of totally loving and kind, which is how I'd like to be a guru to be, but they can be, you know, getting you doing all sorts of things which are very difficult to do, but it's very helpful for your spiritual development to do them, and beneficial for maybe other people too, like, because you're doing a useful job in the world instead of just wanting to sit around doing your own studies all the time. But yeah, that's It's difficult to put your finger on, say, you know, the key indicators. Yes, it's in Indian tradition, isn't it?
Like, yeah, so I was saying that although they are on the same field in terms of compassion facts, I was saying that their knowledge is incorrect somewhere down the line.
Of non-Buddhist traditions, you mean, or?
Yeah. You're talking about like what qualities should we have. Well, Lord, say Indian teachers can't exactly the same quality.
Yeah. Yes, that the teaching has to be one that makes sense to you at your level, that you're ready for. So you have to discriminate about how subtle the teachings are. And that's really the way I've gone. It's like, you know, more interested in the teachings than the teacher, personally. But Lama Zopa does say that there's no enlightenment without the guru, doesn't he? You can know all the Kangya and Tengyo by heart or something, you know. All the holy books you've got, you can, you know, you can explain everything in them. But unless you've got a guru, you don't go to Buddhahood. So the Buddha's got to work through the guru to bless you or something, I don't know. So that you can, your own qualities on your own aren't enough or something. Well, you know, when Lama Zopa's in a book like that, there's a good couple of chapters which are very specific about, you know, you've got to have a guru, and when the guru's got faults, it's your karma. If the guru's got faults, the Buddha's got faults, you know. So if you're seeing faults, it's your karma of the students, you know, kind of quite full-on guru devotion type of teaching, isn't it? So you don't hear things like that from His Holiness quite so strongly, do you? And I'm living in Dharamsala, so I was hearing many, many more teachings by His Holiness than Lama Zopa. So he never emphasizing like that. But, you know, he's following the same path. So if you look in the Lamrim text, guru devotion is there. It's one of the components by the beginning. And especially if you're doing Tantra, it's kind of extremely, you know, sensitive issue. It becomes even more important, doesn't it? You've got to think that your teacher is not just like a Buddha, but he is the Buddha in Tantra. So it's sort of... But His Holiness used to give things away by the way he talked about his own gurus, you know. So when he'd just be telling anecdotes in his teachings, he'd be saying, oh yes, Ling Rinpoche said this to me once, and that's how I knew he had clairvoyance, because I knew I'd never told him that, you know. So and he'd give really instances of, not from the point of view of showing how good a student he was, but just, you know, the way he'd just treated his own teachers, you know, treating Rinpoche, because they're a delicate issue with, you know, various problems there. But, you know, it's a sort of, you'd get across to you how important it was to be respectful to the guru just by telling you how hard he tried to do that, you know. And it's sort of very, sort of just, he'd come across in his teachings how he was, you know, sort of put his gurus at a very high level. But not these forthright teachings, oh, you've got to do this, do everything the guru tells you. He wouldn't be quite so strong on that as Lama Zopa. by Lama Zopa. I probably looked at a few pages, but that hadn't. It doesn't stick in the mind. Yeah. Yes. You've been. Yeah. Yeah, well, real, genuine gurus, golden gurus are very rare, you know, so. Yeah, okay, well, perhaps we should stop there for a cup of tea. Thank you for your offerings. And then we'll try to talk a little about the signs of irreversibility in the text to complement that. But there's not necessary to say a great deal, probably, although there are a lot of them. But they're not quite the sort of thing we've been talking about. Thank you anyway. Yeah. I see you're all mature people, not rushing overboard in wrong directions with your guru devotion. But probably all more enthusiastic than me, who are a bit lazy in these things. So 20 minutes.
Time there.
No, I'm sorry. It's, we're all.
I've probably spent over 4